Grace, mercy, and peace be to you. In the name of our King, Jesus is his name. Amen. There are two focal points, two pieces of the texts which we've already heard, which I'd like to shine a magnifying glass on, invite you to contemplate further as we do this morning. The first is our psalm, Psalm 111, but it's particularly this third verse, as Psalm 111:3 says, "Full of splendor and majesty is his work." Full of splendor and majesty is his work. The second focal point is from the gospel lesson, and it's late, and in this 28th verse of Mark chapter 1, we read, "And at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee." Dear friends, these are our texts. There was a bit of leverage that my father-in-law often exerted on his three children, including my wife Andrea, when they were learning their manners. It went like this. Since their name is Lion, was Lion, and if you have any working knowledge of the royal family in England, the Queen Mother's name is also Bose Lion. There is a distant link to the royal family that my wife's family clung to. And what happened was, when they were learning their manners, especially eating with a fork and at a nice restaurant, their father could say, "You need to learn this. One day you could become king. You could be called up, and you could become king. And in that time, you need to know how to use your proper manners." And it was with dead seriousness that he invited his children to act like royalty. Now, it's leverage that not every family has. Although, I suppose, if you think about it, we all have some distant link to royal blood, either by nature of our birth or by being grafted into it, if you think about that imagery in the New Testament, especially in the book of Hebrews. If it was you that got called up to be the queen or the king, I wonder what changes you would make. If it was you that was next in line for the throne, and the current queen or king passed away, and you were elevated to the stature of being the queen or the king, how would you handle it? I wonder, would you even accept, or would you, like some have done, abdicate your throne to someone more worthy? What are the ingredients of majesty? As I look at that verse from Psalm 111, verse 3, to think about splendor and majesty that belong to God, what does that actually mean? What is it that we're actually talking about when we call God majestic, refer to his splendor? Is it the finery? Is it the sort of the fabric, the texture of the fabric that God wears? Some insignificant sort of in our minds detail about what he looks like? Is it the jewels or the riches maybe that we associate with royalty? Is it the throne itself or the crown itself or the palace that the king lives in that makes the king? No, we know that none of those things actually make the queen or the king. But it's their identity. It's their blood. For Jesus, his kingly authority was articulated in unexpected ways. He was different than those who expected a king were hoping for. He broke the mold, so to speak, for what a king does. And here in the first chapter of Mark is a good example. We see Jesus in a somewhat forgotten town, Capernaum, way up north, a somewhat insignificant fishing village in the synagogue, and he's there, teaching, and largely unrecognized by the people that he's teaching, save for this one man who has, by nature of his evil spirit, keen eyesight to recognize the Holy One of God. Jesus commands the unclean spirit to come out of him with authority, something only Jesus could have done at that moment, proving his identity. And therefore, as the text tells us, at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region. The word got out, in other words, he's something special. Now, if Jesus came with authority, he exacted that authority, he exerted it in an unexpected way. Not the way that we would maybe anticipate kings to do it, going maybe to the seats of power and influence and sitting on them. Not by gathering a force behind him, as many other kings throughout human history have done, but by gently and quietly beginning his work, calling disciples, inviting those who would listen to come along. What is majestic about that? What is royal about Jesus? We see Jesus today in Mark chapter 1 delivering the man with the unclean spirit. We see him in other scenes healing those in Capernaum and the surrounding towns, inviting those with leprosy, those who had palsy, those who had missing limbs to come to him and to receive healing, inviting those who were outcasts, who had broken the law, perhaps by sleeping around, or who were even working as sex trade workers, inviting those unsavory, impolite folks to come and eat at his table, or going to their tables and eating with them. We see this king mixing it up with the likes of you and with me. There's a scene in one of the more recent Robin Hood movies. There's been a lot of Robin Hood movies, haven't there? But the one that stars Russell Crowe as Robin Hood, there is a scene early on in that movie where King Richard, now in the first service I said King Arthur, I was helpfully corrected by Adam, whose sister actually studied Robin Hood thoroughly, so he knows. But King Richard is coming back from his conquest in the Middle East, or however it went. If you read history, you might know that there's color to that. But the point is, King Richard was coming back with his army, traveling across Europe, and there's the scene where he's camped. The whole army is camped, and it's evening, and the light is low, and Richard looks to his aide, his right-hand man, as it were, and says, "Let's go out among the people, among the men." But not as a king. He covers his head with a hood and wears common clothes, and he says, "Let's go out and eat and drink, and let's go and find an honest man." If you've seen that movie, it's an entertaining scene. And so he goes out, and then, of course, there's the scene where Robin Hood and his opponent, Little John, who becomes Little John, they're fighting, and they accidentally bump into the king, and they knock him over. And then his hood comes off, and everybody realizes it's King Richard, and everybody falls to their knees. To me, it was a compelling scene because it's the kind of thing that Jesus does, isn't it? The King of Kings who puts on common clothes, this is the incarnation. The King of Kings who usurps or who lets his glory fade for a little time at least, who comes into the messy, disease-ridden, trouble, hurt-inflicted world and finds an honest man or woman. Will he find you or me? And where will he find us? When Adam was sitting on the throne just a couple of minutes ago, I wonder if you imagined yourself there too, and were squirming on the inside a little bit. I wonder if, as you sat there, Adam, if you felt as though this just feels wrong. To have everybody else standing and me sitting down is a small detail, but it just feels wrong. To be sitting at the center of attention in a place like this, a church, it just feels wrong, doesn't it? When your life or mine are examined under the bright, perfect light of God's holiness, some part of us begins to squirm. We just feel wrong. And yet the King comes to us in that place of humiliation and says, "My child, my subject, you belong. This is what my kingdom is made from. Broken, mixed up, messed up, sinful people like you. And that's where the splendor comes in. That's the other word here, isn't it? Splendor. The psalmist says, splendor and majesty. Full of splendor and majesty is his work. What does splendor mean? Do you know that word? Splendor is a word that we don't often use maybe for common usage, but it means magnificence, grandeur, glory, opulence. It's a word that's associated with the aesthetic, how a thing looks. And so splendor has to do with how God's work looks. Well, how does it look? God's work is taking soiled garments and making them clean again. God's work is taking messy, tangled up, hurting lives and making them sing again. God's work is taking broken and despairing and tired lives and making them live again. This is splendor. That's the kind of splendor that the King of Kings brings to your life. By standing in your place, by receiving the blows, the ridicule, by receiving the nails and the death that you deserved, Jesus has given you a beautiful gift, His splendor. And yes, dare we even say it, His majesty, calling you His own, His child. You now have His royal blood. Splendor and majesty are His work. You are His splendiferous, majestic work. And so we bear this burden. If not the burden of sitting on the throne as the King of Kings, a slightly lesser burden of being His image bearers. Image bearers, that's what we are. Have you ever thought about that? The mandate of creation, when God created the first person people, He made them image bearers, as Genesis chapter 1 tells us. Let us create them in our image. And male and female, He created them. What does it mean to be an image bearer? I wonder if you've ever investigated that. I've taught about it before. I've thought about it and talked about it here. It means that you bear the image of the king. And you know, back in the time when monarchies were more prevalent in our world's history, this is how kings exerted their dominance, their influence, on the territories that they were in authority over. The king would leave his image, like a carved image, somewhere in a prominent place in a city or in a town, and so everybody would know, that's the king's image, this is his town. How does God leave His image in the world? Does He erect monuments, perhaps? Large, gigantic slabs of marble where He carves His image and says, this territory is mine? No, He uses something even better. He uses you, His image bearers, to bear His image in the world, to reflect His presence and His glory, His goodness, His splendor and majesty in the world is reflected to the world through you. And that means that, dear friends, we have this burden, image bearers. I've never really enjoyed putting one of those fish on the back of my car. I sometimes drive, call it a little bit with a pressing matter on my mind, and I am not altogether confident to allow my driving to represent the kingdom, if that makes sense. If someone sees me driving in my car, I don't want them to say, oh, that's one of those, you know, that's, and to whatever else goes along with that symbol. But now it comes to me, and this burden of image bearing hits home. Because whether you're driving or walking or whatever you do, you bear God's image. And so when people see you, they see God. They see a representative of that place down the street called Grace Lutheran Church. And so how are you doing with that? Thanks be to God that we have His covering, His perfect forgiveness, which makes our imperfect offerings perfect in His sight. Thanks be to God that we have Jesus' blood, His royal blood, which fills and replaces our own imperfect blood, which covers over a multitude of sins. And so I invite you, dear people, dear friends and family, to be his image bearers, to proclaim his goodness and grace here, and so that when people think of Grace Lutheran, and when they think of the kingdom, they see your face and they see one who is filled with the forgiving, redeeming love of Jesus himself. May you be known, and may we all be known, for the way he has covered us with his blood. May you be known, and may we all be known, for the royal family that we are. Fixated upon the King of Kings, Jesus himself, enamored, overwhelmed with his character, preoccupied with our King of Kings. And when people think of you, may they say in their minds, there's that Jesus person again. May they see Jesus running through the cracks and imperfections of your life, filling you with his royal blood. This same Jesus who continues to shine forth in majesty and splendor in the thirsty and grasping world that we live in. Amen. And now may the peace of knowing our King of Kings guard your hearts and minds as we anticipate his second coming. Amen.